Thank you. So last week, during my absence on Monday, I was bravely volunteered by the organizers.
Coordinators.
Okay. So to give a seminar today. So then I realized I really didn't have anything to talk about. So we started with Bill this idea we had a year and a half ago when I visited Birmingham in a slightly different context of seeing if we can use acoustic glitches to get some information on changes in composition. Well, in this case, it will be solar-like stars. What we did initially was assuming that the sun had experienced a phase of accretion early in its evolution, as suggested also by Joyce in relation to the solar abundance problem and things like this. That time we were not successful in finding anything. This time we're still not sure. So I think this seminar fulfills the requirement that it will be short, extremely informal, especially because of the content, and absolutely open to strong criticisms, to mild criticisms, and especially suggestions. So the idea is if we can put some constraints on microscopic diffusion using astroseismology. I mean, we know diffusion is an ubiquitous process. We know this very clearly from especially compact stars, the AY dwarf, the BY dwarf with pure hydrogen, pure helium envelopes are probably the best examples. We talked yesterday about SDVs and how the helium abundance changes because of diffusion as well. And okay, people working on these stars, of course, need diffusion plus gravitational, plus relative acceleration to excite modes in the stars. However, I would say evidence in solar-like stars is scarce. It's almost non-existent.
Including the sun?
So the probably the only really good example we have of diffusion is the sun. And we need gravitational settling in particular to have a good agreement with helioseismology, at least if we refer to all the solar composition. I mean, this kind of agreement of, between the model and the solar sun speed, and also the agreement in the depth of the convective envelope and the surface helium abundance you get in the models are only possible if you include the element diffusion. I would say also the particular helium is important because the surface helium abundance measured by helioseismology is very close to Big Bang nucleosynthesis. So not accounting for gravitational settling would imply that the helium abundance is almost primordial.
Can you ask, so Big Bang corresponds to the
Okay, so this is convective envelope. Okay, this is mostly adiabatic stratification, so basically all models fit there. Right? You have the boundary here and this little bump in sound speed here, I mean little because this is a 0.5% at most, right? 0.3 in the peak. This is right below the convective zone. Okay.
Maybe you get why it is.
Sorry?
From where do you get why it is?
You mean from the value from helioseismology, right?
How?
From gamma 1, right? From the dip in gamma 1.
And absolutely clearly, it's not due to rotation.
Well, what? This?
Yes. Because
well, I mean,
you stellar models and do not include that you have rotation, which is different.
Yeah. Well, some models do include rotation. Then depends on how you parameterize the mixing induced by rotation. You can diminish this a little bit. For example, if you include some turbulent mixing.
You're not showing a comparison of one with diffusion.
Oh, no, but without diffusion,
so without diffusion is
terrible.
Yeah. So this is the best you can
yeah,
do
this
with
is,
diffusion.
Yeah, this is, yes, and this is very good compared without diffusion. I'm not showing that, but it's very, yeah.
I want to come back to YS again.
Yeah.
That's why YS, if you say you measure it from the pressure in gamma 1, does it not depend on which equation state you use? What are
Sure.
So but you cannot determine it for helioseismology. It's model dependent.
Well, of course, everything is model dependent, right? I mean, to some level, right? But, yeah.
I understand you are using
old element abundance.
Yeah, sure. But even without, with a new element abundance, if you don't use diffusion, things get much worse.
Yes. Not much, somewhat worse.
I'm just still understand the role of rotation. I mean, your seismology and others, on which angle they determine and on which angle.
Oh, this is, I mean, average, right? So this, there's no.
But now 2D stellar models with sun proper.
I think the question here is that
with differential rotation and all that stuff, you don't have it.
Yes.
Are you referring to dynamical effect of rotation?
Yeah,
or
I mean,
that very small.
Yeah, okay, it's a lesson.
Don't you have it in your model?
We are not. Okay, I don't think Aldo or I or anybody has actually. Mark must have.
Sorry?
I have rotation, but I've not run.
Oh, but you can look at the models by a French group, for example, which includes some kind of mixing because of rotation. And
no. I'm not about mixing both rotation. I'm about the difference.
That's nothing. It's very small.
It's very small.
It's very, very small.
The
sun rotates very, very slowly.
Just like nice to show it.
It's 1% of breakup.
It's nothing.
But this is a 0.1%. Right. So, I mean, when you say very small, this is even smaller.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see that plot with and without.
That's what I'm trying to understand. How small is your rotation if it's...
No, it's 1% of breakup. Doesn't mean that this is 1% of the hydrostatic pressure, right? So it's completely...
It just takes a plot to show.
Yeah.
Show them.
Okay. So
we gotta do it to show it that we don't need.
A very last comment.
Yeah.
I agree that the sound speed can be obtained from Higgs seismology.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that we probably know relatively well the radius of the sun. I do not agree that we know the helium surface abundance for Higgs seismology.
When you say you don't know, you have to specify to which level, right? You also mean this, right? So, for example, I mean, do you think the uncertainties in the equation of state are large enough as to, let's say, produce a very large change in the central value of the surface helium abundance?
It depends on exactly how you, for instance, treat element diffusion or what the evolutionary kind of.
No, I don't think so. Why? I mean, you just do a static analysis of the sun. You don't care about the evolution to determine the helium in the envelope.
Yeah,
you just do an envelope. Well, it's dependent on the model, sure.
Yeah,
but my question is...
How you evolve the sun over time? Your model?
No, I don't agree with that. In the determination of helium by helioseismology, you don't care about the evolution.
You're just doing a snapshot of what the frequencies are saying about what's going on at 50,000 degrees in the envelope today.
Yeah.
Now, if you try to make solar models that match that, though, then you have to take into account evolution and the new and old.
Sure, but that's just, but that, that's
and
not.
Whether or not you include diffusion matter,
sure.
It all matters.
Well, but that you don't need to determine using helium.
Then you're comparing with this inference. Yeah. I've seen checks on different equations of state, and it goes between 0.24 and 0.25, the helium mass fraction.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bigger if you include uncertainties and element abundances.
Yeah.
But if you don't include any diffusion, all the abundances, you can get 0.27.
And you mean in the solar models? Not in the determination
right,
of helium by heliosolar.
Right, and if you don't include diffusion with the new abundances, you get some low
value. So 26 or something. Mm-hmm. Sure. But that's in the models, not in the heliosolar determination.
Right.
Okay, so the second less direct evidence of diffusion came from including this in stellar models in general and looking at the effect on the HR diagram of evolutionary tracks. So this evolution of the same mass, same initial metallicity with diffusion in red, without diffusion in black. So these models with diffusion get cooler. They evolve a bit faster, so when you construct isochrones, for example, and you try to fit the ages of globular clusters in particular, you get younger ages, which are more in agreement with the age of the universe.
How long is that? So is the difference, the age difference is big?
The age difference is appreciable, but the most important thing is the shift here. So So if you have an observed turnoff, you have, if you use smaller mean diffusion in the larger mass, therefore the age becomes smaller.
Now, in white dwarfs, the latent heat, if you will, of settling is an appreciable energy source. Is that not the case?
Sorry, say again.
For white dwarfs, when you have gravitational settling, that's a source of heat. Is that?
Oh, I don't think. I think here it's and in white dwarfs, it's mostly neon 22. I mean, right. It's kind of marginal effect. I mean, only relevant.
Oh, that Lars isn't here.
For large metallicity, right?
Yeah.
So this turnoff is in the foreground of the cluster?
This is track. This is not an isotron.
Okay.
You can more or less fit with or without diffusion. But if you do without diffusion for over, I mean, this is no problem from the early 90s. I mean, particularly before.
Well, I think already without diffusion, many other class quite okay for clusters. They don't have this problem which was in the past, like 50
gigahertz. Sure not.
So,
but models with diffusion give more sensible results. Yeah.
Can you quote the difference?
this will give you about 1.5 gigahertz or something like this for a 12 gigahertz old cluster, like 6397. For example. Yeah, something like that. In any case, as I said, it's indirect, right? As I said before. So it's not the time saying that this is fantastic. Yeah. So the next direct detection, but this I also doubt, in a sense, is an analysis of precisely NGC 6397, so this is metal poor globular cluster, it's about minus 2 in iron, minus 2.1 or something like this. So what Andreas Korn and collaborators did here was to observe different stars, which range from the turnoff subgiant, okay, the blue red giants they call, and the red giant branch, and look at the compositions they see. And so in a sense, you can assume that moving in towards lower temperature, you are kind of seeing the evolution of the star. Okay. And what they see is that metals tend to increase when you go to lower temperatures. That is when convective envelope gets down and dredges up the metals that were diffused down before. Okay. So this is direct, indirect evidence of it.
If I'm not wrong, since 6397 is one of those global clusters which has multiple populations.
I don't remember, but the more you look, all of them start.
Yes, so almost all of the large, massive global clusters now have at least three populations. So, I mean, when you speak about the metal settling in there, so about which population is talking?
Well, I don't know the details in this, but I don't think they worried about the different populations in this case, right? In any case, if there would be different populations and you are sampling without this a priori, right, you should see a scatter here. Okay. But, but I'm not sure anyway that there are these multiple populations in this cluster, but aside from that, I think here the problems are of more important problems are of a different sort, and are the systematics involving doing spectroscopy of subgiants, or the internal stars, or giant stars. And this, I think, is not under control to this level. I mean, here we're talking about 0.15 days, right? So it's a small difference. I mean, it looks large in the plot, but it's not large in reality. So if I would be worried about this, I would be more worried about the systematic and the spectroscopic analysis. Okay, the lines here are models from Michoa and Richard, which, okay, they have settling plus some turbulent mixing, which they parameterize. Anyway, so I think maybe I'm forgetting something, but that's more or less what we have about diffusion in solar-like stars or in main sequence of giants and so on. Okay. So what the idea that we were thinking of with Bill is to see if something can be obtained from acoustic glitches. So here I just put the solar model to exemplify this, and so basically this is the derivative of the sound spin with respect to the acoustic depth, which is given here, and you see two prominent glitches here. This is produced by the helium-2 ionization, the ionization of helium-2. Yeah. And this is produced when you switch from convective, from adiabatic transport, basically to radiating transport at the bottom of the convective envelope. Okay. So here you see the change in temperature gradient that occurs here, which gives rise to this. And you, okay, you can also see here the effect of helium. And in terms of the acoustic depth here, what you have here, because of diffusion, is a jump or a steep change in molecular weight. So this is not present if you don't assume diffusion, of course. So the idea is, does this step in mu add, let's say, some strength to the acoustic glitch that we have here? And can we detect this? Okay. Well, so you will see, it will not, I don't think it will be, but as I said, we are just starting to look at this. Okay.
Question about yeah. some dynamic, I think it's 16
okay.
When they did some spectroscopic measurements, they have different surface.
Yeah, they have different compositions.
Is that kind of indirect evidence for diffusion?
I cannot comment on that. I don't know the details of that. But how are the two components? I mean, of the, I don't even know the masses.
Think we should start with the same.
Yeah, but the masses.
I don't know. It was not that different.
Both.
And they're both main signals.
Yeah.
But what is the difference in composition?
It's different enough. I mean, they can distinguish it. They're not within the error bars in each other, from what I remember. The velocities. So if they are somewhat different masses, they could get different amounts of diffusion. They're at different surface conductive envelopes.
Yeah, sure, sure. Okay, I don't know how large the differences are.
I don't know if there are more sunlight stars like that, but trying to find more binaries.
The difference is not so
big. It's not so big.
Yeah.
So understanding why it's not big there and then bigger in 16-30 degrees.
Yeah, the problem is that solar metallicity diffusion is quite slow for a solar mass star, right? I mean, the sun after 4.5 gigayears is 12% change
right.
in composition, right? So it's
right.
0.06, like, so it's quite small.
I believe that the 16th they gave you were 6.5 billion years. They're older than the sun, so they're
Well, you can probably
scale
more
or less. Very different.
Sorry?
For certain specs of diffusion, timescales are very different.
Well, it depends on how thin the convective envelope is, right?
We're talking about the whole convective envelope.
Because what matters is the diffusion at the bottom, right?
So the star, you have to get it diffused at the bottom.
So these guys are both in your binary level small enough that they're...
Well, they say it's around solar.
Oh, yes. They're like the sun. They're like the sun, and they've been around 6.5 billion, so they have had longer to diffuse.
So you don't have one of the radiant
problems. I just think that's an interesting test.
Yeah, sure.
A model of diffusion.
Yes. The problem there is that the problem that you have to be very careful about is, for example, you can look at there are a few papers by Ramirez and Melendez and Asplund where they look at solar twins, right? What they call the solar twins.
Yeah.
So you look at stars which have basically the same surface parameters as the sun. Therefore, you can do abundance analysis strictly differential. Okay, so you basically can remove all your systematics in your model atmospheres, for example, and so you can get much better relative abundances, okay, than absolute value in this case. And what they find there is that depending on which stars you look at, even if you select your twins as having the same iron abundance as the sun, you get different patterns of abundances for refractories and for volatiles, depending on whether the star seems to have a planetary companion or not, and things like this. And these are all at this level of, you know, around 0.1 dex difference and so on. So, in a sense, they claim that this may be related to accretion happening during the planetary formation phase. And if this is true, you have to be very careful that your sample is not polluted by by this effect. So.
For long metallicity, stars about one are not convective.
It's very thin, but I will not care about this anyway. So, yeah. These are completely outside the Kepler target, so I don't care about this. This is just, I mean, the convective envelope is, yeah, very, very thin. Diffusion is, as Bill was saying before, it's very fast. Sure. Right, can be very fast. But the timescales get very fast.
Those are also a mystery. Diffusion timescales are fast, and yet we see metals
exactly,
in stars.
Yes,
so
yes.
How did they get there?
So, in a sense, let's say diffusion is, with the solar flavor is too efficient when we look at other stars.
Then,
in any case, sorry. All this I will not care about. I will not care about this. I will not care about. So.
But don't you have to worry about rotation in stars which have 1.3, 1.4? Very, very, very slow rotation
sure,
is
sure.
sufficient to offset.
Sure. Sure. But as I say, this, I don't care.
Rotation makes
sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay, anyway, so this is just, I'm using just diffusion in the solar flavor, let's say, so there's also no radiative levitation included, which may also affect the hotter part and so on. And there's no rotation, but this is just, to identify relevant regions in the mass metallicity plane that can be of interest for Kepler targets. Okay. So basically what this show is the factor by which you modify, you deplete basically, or you diminish the surface molecular weight, which is due to diffusion. Okay. So you can get to something like this, the very very low metal case and small masses. For reference, the depletion factor you have in the sun is this number, so it's very small in the sun. Okay. Now, when you look at Kepler solar-like stars seen by Kepler, more or less what you have is a mass distribution that looks like this, like it was reporting the science paper this year and the ensemble, and the metallicity is okay taken by from the Kepler input catalog. But, okay, it's enough for the purposes here. You have somewhat subsolar average value. Okay, so since I don't want to get into trouble with a high mass here, I will just take a look at this part here and more or less this part here. Okay, which is basically what I just circled here. So in this region is where we may have some Kepler targets that might be of interest for us. I mean, remember, Kepler almost has no detection here, and especially at low metallicity.
On this one, once these are reported, are they respect to the old and new solar abundances?
Sorry?
Are these
magnitudes
that are reported with respect to the old and new solar abundances?
The kick, I don't know how it was computed. Okay, the values I'm writing here, I take zero gravity of 198, corrected by diffusion. So this is the initial value. The diffusion is 0.06 days change. Right? Yeah. So zero here would be gravity of val plus this 12% or something.
I'm sure it would be
for the kick, for the Kepler catalog.
It's important to specify now in the physical.
I mean, but you have to be careful. While you talk about this quantity, you don't care so much what value you're referring to because this is relative, right? So the relative value with respect to sun is not going to change if you change the zero point. Your relative difference is the same. The problem is when you convert this into bulk metallicity for the models. There you start to have, there you have to be careful how you compare things with observations. But as long as you talk about the observed data, you don't care so much.
The iron didn't change as much as the oxygen.
Yeah, well, when you have to map iron into total metallicity, of course, then CNO changes compared to iron and things like this. So, okay, well, Okay, out of the, I just use basically two evolutionary, okay, four, but two changes of mass and metallicity. So for 1.2, I take close to solar value. For one solar mass, slightly more metal poor. I mean, the idea obviously here is that in order to have an effect that you can measure, you need to have a relatively thin convective envelope, right? Thinner than the sun. So the sun is, the effect will be very small. So smaller mass, you kind of require lower metallicity. Okay, and this would be the effect of diffusion in the tracks for these two stars. For example, you see diffusion makes it redder, but it gives you a larger convective curvature because you are settling down a metal. So let's take first the one solar mass case. Basically, what you see here is what I showed before for the sun. So this is the derivative of the sun with respect to the acoustic depth. This is shifted vertically arbitrarily. Okay, this one is the reference value. And you see as this is an evolutionary sequence. Okay, so you see again here the glitch by helium, and here the one at the bottom of the convective envelope. And you see that the effect of the molecular gradient is to sharpen this by a lot and actually to produce this additional peak here. This is not present when you don't use any diffusion absorption. This is the evolution, I mean, for the same models in molecular way. And you see that the step profile develops there.
What convective overshoot below the base of the convection zone in a real smear that out?
Maybe a little bit, yes, like in the case in the sun, right? I mean, yes. But, okay, at the moment, I have not included this. It's something we have to look at, as I said, we started with last week. there was this paper by Jorgen this early this year also, by looking at the convection, how would this affect. And actually, it's something that might help in reducing the bump that Natasha was mentioning at the base of the convective envelope, have some bit of extra mixing there. Right? In the case of the sun, at least, it seems to be constrained to quite a restrictive range in terms of pressure scale. Here, okay, but you know, we have to look at it. In a sense, what we decided to do is first take the most optimistic case, okay? If there's nothing here, that's it. I mean, if there is something, okay, then we worry about making things more complicated. Okay. So one thing to have in mind here is that even if the convective envelopes for these stars are thinner than the sun, which would bring closer the helium, the helium 2 glitch with the convective envelope, these are still quite well separated. And in terms of radius, this glitch is deep enough that you don't care so much about surface effects. Okay, and this just for comparison, the same model as before, and this is the same mass, the same metallicity, more or less models taking a kind of equivalent evolutionary stage, and you see the effects of missing diffusion there. And the effect is double of diffusion in a sense for what we will look at. It's on one hand, it makes this transition sharper. On the other hand, it makes the dip here because of helium smaller, just because helium is less abundant in the envelope. So what we do is we compute the second order differences. I was thinking if I should include some reference here, but so this will be very long. I mean, this has been done by so many people in the last at least 20 years or so. So after subtracting the slowly varying component in Fourier analysis of this, and take a look at what the power spectrum tells. Now, the problem we are finding at the moment is that this seems to be quite sensitive to the modes you use. So basically, the lowest overton you use and how many modes you include in the style. Okay. Well, I was more or less looking at this yesterday, and at least the models in which you find for the, let's say, for the selection of frequencies, for which you find at least that the two peaks are, you can identify them. At least from models, your choice has to be that the frequency of the lowest overtone you use has to be at least about 2/3 of min max of the star. Okay. So this more or less implies that this is the overtone you have to choose. And you need at least 10, yeah. You need at least 10 modes per degree. Okay. Otherwise,
just to clarify, nu max is the
surface nu max, right? The 1.7.
The acoustic.
Yeah.
Not the frequency of maximum.
No. This is the,
which is it? Please don't change the definition. My brain
wants
to.
No,
max.
No, max is
the acoustic. Huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
that's different than
that's why I was checking.
Thank you.
Because if you're already way up there and starting to go.
Just a comment that if you also take any one into account, you will see that the signal is even bigger than the limitation.
Okay. Okay, so you would suggest to remove first the helium. Do you think this can be removed from?
We found out if you take helium one also into account in assessing the acoustics, frequency differences.
And you are sensitive to this with just L equals 0.1? Because here we just.
We looked at L 0.1 and 0.2.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
So we're disclosing about
No.
But for example, in the case of the sun, at what acoustic period do you find this signal?
It's very close already to the turning point, depending, of course, on the frequency. That's why you have to be then very careful. What you assume for the eigenfunctions. Purely sinusoidal or cosine functions, you don't know where. Those who are told, you have to take into account already the
just to show a bit this effect. I mean, if you take an initial, so the lowest overtone X, so quite below this range here, so the helium ionization becomes very broad, and this is very ill-defined in a sense. Whereas if you go to higher lowest overtone, things become a bit better behaved. But it's really it looks quite messy at the moment. Now, just from the okay. Now I show results for this model and this model. Okay. So just selecting two of the possible choices for the lowest overtone and the number of modes you take. Okay. So you see the two peaks here. You see the two peaks here. This is the case for diffusion. At this moment, molecular weight is 4% smaller than the initial value. This is more the equivalent model without diffusion. The idea at the moment that we have looked at is try to compare the maximum power in each of these in each of the peaks. Okay, but as I said, we are at the moment not at the point where we can show something that is robust. Okay. So this we still need to look at this in more detail. Okay. Now if you go to the slightly more evolved model, these peaks are still very prominent. Here in some cases this one are also there. Okay. But the ratio between these two gets larger. So in the sense the power here gets larger. Okay. Probably this because just you are increasing the jump in molecular weight. Now, as I said, since we cannot define a unique choice for the modes we use, and this is just models, this is not related to actual data, I just browse through the different combinations. And this is the ratio of maximum power between the peak for the, in the convective envelope and the helium-2 ionization zone. These four models with diffusion, and these four models without diffusion. Okay, so this is just one model, and this is different selection of the mean, the lowest overton and the number of moles you take. Okay. So, I mean, on systematically, you find that models with diffusion have larger power in the second peak compared to models without diffusion. Okay. When you go to the more advanced case, this becomes even more important. However, you see that you have this point here. So when you have a real star, I mean, what do you do, right? I mean, so.
That's it. That weirdo came from on the right? Is it because you have a different choice?
This is different choice on which on what modes we use for the Fourier analysis, okay? Yeah.
So what determines the amplitude of your peak?
Sorry, again?
What determines the power?
Well, the total power is given
the connections
just by the receivers, right? I mean, the integrated power here is just basically what remains from this, right? From removing the trend. Now, what goes here and here? Well, we still don't know, right? But we think this is because, I mean, the glitch, in a sense, gets stronger because you have a larger difference in molecular weight in this case compared to the previous one, right? But as I said, we're just starting from this.
Does the modeling, if you try to relate it to physics, then it is believed that it is proportional to the amplitude of the second derivative density contrast, which is certainly true if you do modeling and you have, for instance, a local internet description, which I guess is and you have a rate discontinuity in density, the second derivative of the density.
Yes.
In the south, of course, you have effects such as, for instance, the
smearing out of
the shear into account.
And well, that would be related to what Steve was asking about overshooting. For example, if you use some diffusive approach, right?
Sure.
Okay, so that's for the one solar mass case. For the 1.2, okay, as I said, metallicity, you can go higher in metallicity here because mass is larger. So basically, you have the same trend. Okay. Again, this you are still quite deep in the star, which is good. And again, the same idea, right? You just look at the power in the two peaks. That's modeled without diffusion. For different cases. And in this case, when you look at a more evolved model, this is a very very large difference that we find. Still, how to use this then on actual data, we still don't know. And as I say, we still need to have a more robust determination. I mean, it's a very unpleasant situation that this changes by such a large factor just depending on the modes you use. Okay. This is the state of affairs at the moment. Okay. So, yeah.
Thank you. Okay.
Where's the data? The data is in the computer, but as I said, I learned. So something I usually don't like, because it's I think it's in many cases might be a pedantic attitude is to say, oh, I did this plot overnight. This is the proof here. So I still have not looked at data at all. I mean, I'm still not going to look at the data until I have something from models where I have all control I want, that I can.
If you were to start from data, you wouldn't do anything at all.
You should have told Einstein not to work on relativity, because there was no data.
Now, the main signal that you're looking at is the ratio of two peaks.
At the moment,
I just want to make sure I've got this right.
Yeah.
Two peaks in the Fourier transform of the second differences of the frequencies of oscillation in a stellar model.
Yeah.
That seems like a long way between the stellar model and an observational diagnostic. Is there not something more direct that you can do?
We're already using that for the second differences for getting the base of the computation.
But that's because it's computationally convenient. Clearly those 12 points that determine a time series are a frequency difference series, think of it as a time series. There are better ways to model that than adding up sinusoids, right? Autocorrelation functions, more generally, other things. It seems to me that you're going very far away from the physics by imposing a sinusoid or a sequence of sinusoids to describe the second difference. I know people have thought and been thinking about this for decades.
Well, I think certainly you can do something more sophisticated like what Gunther and that was doing, but I'm not sure the data will actually be good enough to do that. So maybe with the real data, the best you can do is to hope that this, despite looking at the total power effectively summed over a range of periods.
Right. I don't think you'll ever convince anybody to do anything serious to model that graph, though. because, you know, even in the ideal case of looking at a model, it depends on what modes you pick to do it, as Albert showed so plainly. Yet if you know what the overtones are, the direct modeling approach might not be terrible. But again, I'm speaking out of ignorance. I think people have been discussing this for, well, at least since 1995, when I had a long talk with Douglas about it when I was with Steve Cambridge. So it's nothing new.
So the direct model approach might be a good way to go about it. And this is my reasoning back when we were trying to look at whether the bottom of the convection zone was a sharp gradient or a steep gradient.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the sound speed inference, you kind of smear it over a bunch of frequencies where you've done some inversion and figured out what an average sound speed is. And so you might pick something, but if you looked at individual frequencies compared to the data at the time, so you could see a clear difference, a spread, a glitch or something going on there. And you could make that bigger or smaller depending on what you did with that gradient. So there was more information there that we weren't getting just by doing a sound speed inversion,
mm-hmm.
and kind of averaging over that region of the convection zone.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow looking at just comparing the frequencies or the frequency differences directly from maybe your best seismic model and this data would be maybe more sensitive.
Okay.
Based on that experience I had with looking before.
Did you try to do the same with the NUMAX, as NUMAX as defined for the solar light stars? Not with the cutoff frequency?
No, it's not so he said cutoff frequency, but it's NUMAX actually. Yeah. Okay, well, it's just,
It's NUMAX meaning the frequency.
Sure. It's related to acoustic, it's 1.7.
So you're going across the maximum amplitude, you're really using the best signal you've got.
Yeah.
You're not pushing up against
it. Yeah.
Good.
I mean, if you push too higher and you get the stronger peak for the convective zone, but you lose completely the helium, for example. I mean, if you go beyond the
surface effects would become bigger as well.
Back to the NUMAX I wormhole.
Yes.
I thought you scared me there.
Well, I wasn't sure. Because it would make sense in some sense to use the acoustic, but as all the points out there, they're correlated.
So your frequencies, you calculate them, are adiabatic. You also implicitly, as we all do, that signal from the human deionization zone, or the dip in gamma 1, is a proxy of how much helium is in a connected envelope, which might be true or not, because we have no really full physical picture of how they relate to each other. We know, however, that it depends, of course, on the strong and heavy elements. And so, if I understood correctly, you take the heavy element abundance from observations or whatever. Yeah.
That's true.
Yes. Whatever the claim is for the sun, we don't know from that. And then yet you think that you have a measure for helium by using the equation in gamma 1.
Why do you say I have a measure for helium?
Well, I think you understood that you said in the very beginning is why as you get from helium seismology.
Now you're talking about the sun, or this, or
the sun or any star, which is similar to the sun.
Well, but here I'm not determining any helium, right? I mean, I just get the power in that village. That's all I do.
Yeah, I know. I don't. It's a general statement. It's nothing. Well, it's related to what you're doing. But the problem that we had, still have, is really how you then relate. Depression in number one, which you can measure from the second fitness fitness, how you can produce it. How does that really relate then to an absolute value of the meaning in the angle? Because you have to assume something, either you know exactly the value of Z, or you have some other kind, you need still one additional input, such as, for instance, the entropy of the connective envelope from which the core connections are used. Probably with these two, we wouldn't perhaps be in position to measure the energy. So that would be a long-term goal. Many people have worked on that, as I just said before.
But for that, I mean, if you say,
Okay, you need the entropy, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, first thing you have to do is to get rid of this in the end, right?
But all what I want to say is that if people claim they can measure helium by the gamma 2 bit, they have assumed something else in making this claim.
Just for clarity, with diffusion, you mean thermal diffusion?
Gravitation, I'm certainly.
Which diffusion formalism do you use?
Go ahead, say something bad about it.
No, it's a very good routine. I'm using which resistance coefficients do you use? Is that the one in the original?
Yes.
Because I think the other ones you're using coherence.
Yes, but I'm not sure if they give such a large difference in this case for solar.
Yeah, I don't know.
And you're worried about finishing early.
I'm done. It's just people, you know, insisting.
Are there any other questions? Let's thank Aldo again. Oh, sorry? Yeah.
Are you pictures from stalls?
For this? For this? No.
Not the question. We still don't understand.
No. So we're trying 1560 and B when it's ready.
Yeah.
Just a comment, maybe you should have looked at the CBT and its work, and the CCD work as well. You should look at that already in some years ago. In the tools, the evaluation code. I don't remember exactly the details, but basically I think the conclusion was it was going to be very hard to detect this kind of signatures, at least with the cobalt
effect. But was she looking at what in particular?
Well, the effect of diffusion on the positions were like stars. So it's similar to what you pointed out. So yeah, I encourage you to see what she
Well, there was a few months ago a paper by Mark Pinsonneau also looking at taking diffusion as kind of uncertain in a sense for determining depth of the conductivity envelope. But
Do you think adding humidity to levitation matters at all?
For I don't think for this would make such a, you know, I mean, if you keep more or less in the range of parameter which are not far from solar, I don't think you're able to higher mass. But
I think it's just 2 meters, about 1.2.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
CPTI was made some calculation as well.
Yeah.
One more question. So when you will come, I hope you compare with real data. So do you think that this effect will be clear? Yeah, for sure.
So not even clear in the model.
Yeah,
let me
help.
Yeah.
Let's keep the hope.
Sure.
So comparing with the real data, you will have more effects of, like we saw last week, that we need a new surface effect and everything like this. So do you think that we'll be able to distinguish points among these papers?
It's impossible to give an answer to that at this moment. As you say, you can keep hope, but at the moment that's all we can do.
Well, good news, the two things you mentioned there, the effects of activity in the surface are slightly varying things with frequency. Analysis will
improve. I think at the moment it's really seeing if you can get something robust from models, first of all.
Mm-hmm. As Aldo said, we deliberately took the best case.
Yeah.
It's not really to start with voice free.
Yeah.
So. Well, let's let Aldo off the hook. Thanks again.
Thank you.
And hopefully we've given you a lot to think about on the plane when you get there.